SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Oaklawn Park. I guess I'm not supposed to say Oaklawn Park anymore. Right, Hammer? Park? It's just Oaklawn.
It's just Oaklawn. Trying to phase away from the park. It's Oaklawn Racing Casino Resort.
All right. Lock that in.
Which we can attest to after the grand tour we got yesterday.
Unbelievable, actually. Yeah. Well, no, we'll definitely talk about it because it's spectacular. Let me say, good morning, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com, it is going to be about as beautiful a summer day. Oh, wait a minute. It's not exactly a summer day, is it? It's amazing. It's going to be in the 70s. The sun is burning off. In fact, I should really get a picture of this. Going to have a picture in a minute of Ron Moquette, the majestic Ron Moquette, making his way back here. Oh, look, and he brought Whitmore with him. No, he didn't bring Whitmore. day two here, 24 hours out from opening day. For Oaklawn, it is opening night at Turfway. We want to drive that point home, and we've got tons of things really to do because there was draws, including the Cigar Mile card, which came up really good, and the Starlet six-pack dominated by Baffert entries. And much more. There's also plenty of hard news that we're going to have to address as the morning unfolds. But the first order of business will be a conversation with Ron and Hammer. It really you can feel the general excitement yesterday as we made our way around after the show. It's the excitement's building, especially when you get a Mr. Ron Moquette coming in.
Well, like we said, it's a lot more festive here.
With
in December, with the holiday season and people running around, than it is in January, late January, when it's going to rain or it's not going to rain, and it's 40 or 50 degrees. But I believe them when they told me the weather's better in December. And I got sunglasses on, and everyone else is squinting. So it's beautiful up here in the press box.
Wow, it's always a pleasure, and it really is not a visit at Oaklawn until Ron Moquette sits in. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. This has got to be. You're so ridiculous.
Well, we bet if I'd have won, then I'd have wanted my money. So we went in partners on a pick four.
Was it a pick five carrier? I can't remember. Yeah. It was a pick six.
Anyways,
maybe.
I said what I see, carrier. I'll give you your money.
You're unbelievable.
Would all the favorites win or something? You got $20.
No, we didn't. No, we didn't hit.
Well, yeah. He gave me a tip last night on Stony Brook in basketball. We bet and they covered. So maybe he's on a roll now.
He's known for his gambling prowess.
During the tour yesterday, one of the first things we saw was the sports book, which is now right when you walk into the old parlor, the old instant racing parlor, and Hammer wanted to show me the little kiosk, the betting kiosk. It's unbelievable. He fed a ticket in that when he had a winning ticket, and he said, "What's Stony Brook?" I said, "It's a Sunni. They're okay." He bets Stony Brook, and we looked this morning. They covered easy. They beat American by 23.
You know, I wish that we used to have a long time staple here named Sonny Wigginton, Jesse Wigginton. And it's probably the best basketball handicapper that ever lived.
Ooh.
And I'd give anything if he had been alive during this point, because I think we could have took down the house.
Really? And did you see what they did now during this meet? They're going to have the sports book in the middle of the grandstand.
Oh, it's
that Arkansas place.
Yeah, they're going to have it open to where people can can walk over and bet on football or basketball and then come back and watch their bets on horses. I think it's good. I've been a lot of racinos, and it seems like they always keep them separate and walled off. And I really like the way that they're trying to keep the focus on the horses, but allow you to be able to do other things as well, which is, I think, in the long run, it's going to be good.
One of the things, and that's a point really well made, because everywhere you went in the hotel, and the transition from the track into the parlor, original parlor, and then into the hotel, the horse side of things is front and center. I mean, it's everywhere, including in the rooms where the Moquette Suite is not ready yet. So we'll check on the Moquette Suite.
It's up on the eighth floor.
It's right there.
It's right. Wait a minute. It's that pickup truck on the back fence. But in the rooms, there's graphics of horses.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the horse theme is everywhere.
When I was at Delaware, and I like Delaware's, they probably have one of the prettiest plants as far as the tracks and everything you've ever been. But if you go to the front side, you don't know they have anything to do with horses.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was sad. And the same thing with parks. It's almost like it's a secret. It's like, don't look around the curtain. There, you might see a horse run.
They did it on purpose, I think.
Especially.
But here, I took a video here the first 2 years ago when I first got here. It was the first race on opening day, and I took a picture of the people flooding out of the casino into the racetrack to watch the race. And you've never seen that before.
I love that. And, you know, when you walk into the hotel, there's a big trophy case that's an homage to No Double.
Well, right. the Dash Goff case.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I think that's awesome. And you know, you'll see people waiting to check into the hotel or waiting on an event, and they're always over there going, well, what's this? And then they tell them about the Arkansas Traveler, and that's what it's about.
Lou Sella is going to join us later, and we were talking, and he talked about Dash. You know, you and I had a wonderful conversation with Dash maybe 4 years ago, and when he sat in, and Dash, I guess, has been saying, "I got these trophies. You got to put up a spot for them," and so they found that underneath the escalator.
Yeah,
it's beautiful, and the trophies are. I'll put a picture up on Twitter shortly.
The thing that gets me is you look and see, like, September 14th, he wins at Santa Anita. November or October 1st, he's winning at Gulfstream. I mean, he went everywhere, and there was no airplanes.
That's true.
Well, it's amazing that you think this is trophies from one horse. Like you said, there's Hawthorne, Hollywood Park, Santa Anita. Yeah. They're all over the place. It's incredible.
Had Trailer Wood Travel.
And the trophies, as Steve said, they're all different. I mean, nothing gorgeous. Like you'll see today.
Gorgeous. Yeah. Incredible.
Which I think it's cool. And when you get a good horse and you win some races that give you those kind of trophies, You want to put them out where everybody can see them. You don't want to save them for just you. You know.
Speaking of a good horse with a lot of trophies, you got a new barn name.
Yeah. How cool is that?
How about that? That's pretty cool.
We're so stinking honored about that. The you know, to come through the barn whenever I did, like here. I walked through the stable gate and was actually living in Temperance Hill, Tack Room B. And now to have a barn named after a horse that I trained it seems, you know, it's almost surreal. I don't deserve it. The horse does. I'm so happy that it's got his name. And, you know, that's something that my grandkids can come and
well, you do deserve it because he's not just a horse that you trained.
Yeah.
This was Oakland's horse, Hot Springs horse. This was a house horse that just delivered for year after year after year, and the fact that you were able to get him ready and he was able to run here year after year after year and win all the races he did, well deserved.
Well, thank you. We're very proud of him. But I tell everyone, we'll take all the credit, but we've had some $5,000 horses in there in the same time. So it has to do with the horses. You live by the opportunities that you get. So,
well, you can only deal with the, you know, with the horses that get off the van. That's, you know, we talked about him his whole career, and you know, he just kept exceeding expectations.
Yeah, I can't train a jockey to dunk a basketball. You know, you got to have something that's got the ability. And then if you do, and they want to do it, then it's really makes me look smart.
Well,
and we'll take it. We'll take it, because there's enough times you don't. So,
talk a little bit about just adjusting the schedule and, you know, anticipating. Once you knew that this schedule was going to be implemented and they were going to kick off and they were going to run December and through early January, what, you know, how did it affect, you know, your approach to scheduling where you were going to run and ship and everything else?
Well, it took a lot of planning. And, you know, first off, complete excitement, because everybody wants to be at Oakland. You know, my owners, it's no secret, I train for a lot of Arkansans, and we want to run here. This is we want to run at Churchill, we want to run at Saratoga, Keeneland, and Oakland, and we want to make sure that we do a good enough job to be invited back wherever we go. And with Oakland starting earlier, it meant we had to start thinking logistics. And a lot of people got caught in the tailwind of that. It was because that was the same time we were supposed to be getting ready to leave to go to Gulfstream or go to Fairgrounds or whatever. Now they've introduced us to a new option where logistically there wasn't enough vans to get everybody out.
Well, I got to say, as new to the Midwest area, I didn't understand the scheduling and, you know, just the flow of horses. Only been here a couple years. And when it came out, we're going to start in December here, I'm thinking, I don't know how that worked. But when I went through Saratoga this summer, everyone was so excited about becoming to Oakland early, because I guess it was a gap in the training for after Churchill and no place to run, and you sit here for 4 or 5 weeks. I couldn't believe the excitement of the horsemen to get here in December, and it showed, because, you know, we got over 1,000 horses now here on the backside. And
not only that I noticed, but I started noticing another few little things that indicate excitement for our product that we're putting on here at Hot Springs, is that all of a sudden Fox comes to us and says, we want to do more days. We'd like to. They're going to do every day at the meet, but one. And last year they did about a third. So I mean, it's kind of like the train is rolling. There's a guy at the kickoff the other day said something that I think is the best statement I've heard about Hot Springs right now. He said, in horse racing everywhere, we focus on the good old days. At Oakland Park, the good old days are right now. This is the good old days.
It's a great. That's well put.
You know, to figure out that, you know, you may come to the track and see a Mitoli break his maiden. You could see Gamin and Swiss Skydiver in an allowance race. You know, that's the kind of stuff you with the horsemen that's here, and the ownership that have invested, you could literally see the next gun, you know, gun runner or Rachel or you know, anything break a maiden here on an average Friday.
Right. Well, look at the average Friday tomorrow, the opening day maiden race. We got a couple Into Mischiefs in there. We got Tisnow. We got McLean's Music, and then the first 2 year old race on Saturday is full of.
Which you'd be surprised how many times I go to the restaurants and hear, and people are saying, you know, which is a unique thing for here. I mean, it's like this. They hold the patent on the most conversation about horse racing over breakfast. But they,
Saratoga's pretty good that way.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying it's different. You go here. Wayne Lucas and I went to breakfast at Denny's 2 days in a row here, and we couldn't go back the third because he said he felt horrible. People kept buying his breakfast. I mean, that doesn't happen anywhere else.
He didn't feel that bad.
No, probably not. He said, no, I don't
care it away.
He told me, he said, Ron, I don't even know who it is. Who do you think? And I was like, I don't know. He goes, well, but anyways, they're excited about the fact that 2 year olds are running. You know, it's been since 1974 since we saw a 2 year old here.
That's pretty crazy, isn't it?
And, you know, the guy come up to me at the cafe the other day and said, hey, what's your first 2 year old winner you got? He said, I never thought I'd be able to say that at Hot Springs. And I was like, okay, who are you now? What's your name, sir? But it's just funny that the excitement is real, and we're tickled to death to be here. There's a lot of people that focus on this track, and, you know, and we're trying to make the circuit, My ownership is bought into the fact that I want to run it. I want to compete wherever the horses can, but I want to primarily focus at Oaklawn, Keeneland, Churchill, Saratoga. And not that there's not unbelievable racing other places, but if you can do well in those places, you're going to pay your bills, you're going to win some graded stakes races, and you're going to do what you need to do to survive in this sport.
And I think we're seeing a migration towards that, even if you leave the Saratoga part out and just do Kentucky and Oaklawn. Kentucky and Oaklawn, it's only a couple moves. The money's great. The competition's good, and the tracks have all improved. We just talked about Turfway opening, right? I mean, that went from a tent to now it's becoming a real track. They got the Tapeta there, which is a great place for the Kentucky people to stay in the and see that. People understand, oh, taking horses. It's good to have horses in Kentucky to stay here. It's good that the fairgrounds is opening on time. There's more horses in the area that we can draw from because people like to come and race here in Oakland. If they're not in the area, they don't come.
Oh, it's what it's all about. You got to have circuits. You got to have, you need the people that make their focus at each individual track. Turfway is an awesome spot. Fairgrounds, we know what Fairgrounds can do. It's probably one of the kindest racetracks in the country. It's produced a lot of champions out of there, and there's some of the best characters of the sport come from New Orleans. I've done some time down in New Orleans, and I've loved every minute of it. But I think that's what makes it unique. Our sport is you can go from spot to spot, and you got something different to look forward to wherever you're at. There's a different person that you might not see anywhere, but right there.
Well, and it's funny. This has come up a lot lately, especially paying tribute to some, yesterday Brian Krantz, kind enough to join us in the wake of Gary Palmisano's passing. And you talk about that surface. Bobby Frankel used to say, "You go to New Orleans in November with a horse that wasn't fit, or maybe a 2-year-old that you were pointing for 3-year-old, and by the time you either left or by the time you're ready to run them, they'd be fit as can be." It was the place for him. He said to go get horses.
I agree with that. Geographically, they've got the right setup there for that, and we don't have to worry about weather at all. Really, very rarely. Where here the focus, you got to worry about weather, and I think it takes a different set of things to focus on here to be successful than it does down there. The track is almost an afterthought. Well, the track should be your first thought when you get here.
As we look out, and what's going to be a 75-degree day in December, it's so crazy. Based on the last couple of winters, I mean, I remember as recently as what, 4 or 5 years ago, there'd always be that cold snap in January where there'd be a couple of days lost to training, maybe a day of racing.
Last year, we lost 11.
Well, that
was 11 consecutive days.
That was a weird, yes.
And then raced on the 12th day. Which,
I mean, I can't even look at a Hallmark movie where they got fake snow falling without freaking out now. I've got stress disorder, whatever it's called, but it's
post-traumatic.
PTSD. I'm scared to death if I even see sleet, because we're not built for that here.
Oh. That out last year trying to drive around here.
Yeah, though, and in fairness, I got to defend these guys here. Whenever I come here to Arkansas, to Hot Springs, the first day we had some. I was working for Bernie Flint, and he told me, look, half of our people can't get in. They can't get to the track. You're going to have to take care of more than usual. And I'm like, well, why can't they? Can they not drive? And that's the rumor. Everybody says Southern people can't drive. That's not true. Okay. Now, I'm not going to say they're experienced in it, but I'll tell you this. I went to New York for a winter, and I went to Cincinnati for a winter, and I went to Chicago for a winter. And you know what I saw a lot there? Salt trucks.
Oh, yeah.
I saw plows. I saw street Sand. Crews that did that. I asked our guy here one time, I said, the guy that was in charge, I saw him with his, he was like up all night. And I said, how many people do you guys got cleaning the streets? He said, 4. I said, four trucks? He said, no, four people. He said, we give a lot of our stuff up to the lands and the lakes. And I said, so there's no road crews? There's not any? He said, nah, we don't have enough of that to worry about that. Yeah, so there's not the prepared equipment out there. So everybody will go, it's the funniest thing in the world for me. Is whenever I see somebody from a tag from Wisconsin or Iowa in a ditch as I drive by, going, oh, yeah, it's Arkansas, people can't drive. You're used to having sand on those streets, aren't you, buddy?
I told Hammer yesterday, we were talking about that, and when I lived in North Carolina, and there was like an ice storm, and it was a disaster, and my one of the guys that worked in my group when I was with Procter & Gamble, John Brown, from Hickory, and John said, you know, we got a bad reputation. He goes, it's not that we can't drive when we get the roads messy. He said, our tires. He said, we don't worry about having new tires and having good treads. He says, the reason everybody's spinning around is because their tires are like bald and nobody worries about, you know, you don't really change a tire until it goes bad. He said, there's people driving around with 70,000 mile tires.
We do have Bubba.
They're spinning because there's no tread.
I said, we do have Bubba that's in these four wheel drives that think just because they got four wheel drive, that I was like, four tires will slide off just as much as two.
Yes, they will.
They all drive around me, and they're like coming by honking as they go by. I'm like, well, we'll see you later. You
know? Plus, being a national park, they can't use certain chemicals anywhere to help with the snow.
Now, where it's dangerous driving in Arkansas is the people on the way to get the Daily Double. It's the people that's lived a long life and they really don't care anymore. Those elderly people that may look every third time they go to merge into traffic. You know, that's where the danger is.
The thing is here, which I've learned, and I was talking to Steve this morning, when they merge, they're merging at 30 instead of 60. So I've learned here, if I'm weaving in and out of traffic and I feel like I'm on going, I look down, I'm going 42. And I think I'm going 60, but everyone else is going so slow that, you know. So I don't mind it because everyone's going slow. It's not a competition.
When you come from the Waterston Expressway to here, you really have to adjust a little bit before you start. The first thing you want to do is start yelling at people like, why are you not in a hurry? Do you not have anywhere to be?
And they don't.
Yeah,
I tell Steve, in
LA, December 3rd.
In L.A., the goal at the stoplight is to make the next light and then continue on to make the next one and the next one. Here, there's just no urgency to even... It's like, come on, bud, don't you want to make that green light?
Yeah.
You look over, they don't.
So
it's fine.
So which trainers are you guys most excited about seeing here that's maybe making their maiden voyage here or coming back?
It's an interesting question, actually.
Well, Kenny's coming back. I don't know if he's
loaded for bear.
He
doesn't have any more horses that can win because he won them all last week.
Well, the last three weeks. So I'm glad to see him come back.
Yeah.
He called me and he's like, oh, man, I'm
well, that's his house
races.
Right there. His house is right there at the. Anyone that has losing tickets on Kenny McPeak's horses, if you take a right on Tri Vista. It's the house that's about the fourth one down, and it has a blue door for Kentucky. That's the one you want to get. It's the blue door.
Well, interestingly enough, when he left three years ago, staple
your tickets on the.
He sold that house,
and now he's bought it back.
And he's bought the same house back. He sold it to it was my landlord. Kenny turned me on to my landlord, and so my landlord bought it, and then he called me and goes, guess who's back in the house? Kenny bought his old house back.
And I think he had to pay a little extra, too.
I think he did, too, because he was asking me if I could move in and pay some rent. I said, what, are you kidding me?
Taking advantage of those poor Southern boys like that. But, it's funny that's what's great about, that's unique about Saratoga and Oakland as well. It's like when you leave the track, you may go to Kroger or to the butcher or to wherever. You're going to run into somebody. It's too small of a spot.
Last night, we went to we were at 501 Prime, and we were observing Tommy Vance expertly taking on a dozen oysters.
He was sending them out in sets, too, down the
well,
pretty good.
He's got the right pedigree. I mean, he's definitely been his season way around the oyster bar.
I had to go get Hammer a new printer. Hammer's was having printer trouble, so I got him a new printer for the condo. And there's there's the cowboy himself, Larry Jones. Run into Larry at
Best Buy.
I actually did it at Walmart. I got the brother. I got a new brother recently, like last week, and I love it. So I got Hammer one.
A new brother printer.
Exactly.
Well, that's that's the neat story about that. As far as like seeing everyone here was the day that the first day they ever let me on the radio across the street. They come and got me, and you got to give this selections, and it's 11:30, and I'm in a hurry. I've got three horses in, and so I think there's only going to be about seven people listening to this radio station anyway. So I don't care. I'll do it. Just don't cuss,
right.
And don't let them nail you down to making suggestions or selections. So I went on there, and I had three horses in, and made it through the whole 6-minute segment without them asking me what I thought. And right when I got ready to get off, the guy said, "So, you've got three horses in today. Which one do you like the best?" And I said, "Well, okay, these two are long shots. I doubt we'll do that well. The one in the last, the 10th race, his name is King Snake. And he ought to be the favorite. He'll probably win, So I said, King Snake. So I went to the track. We won the fourth race. Paid $16. Come run second at 25-1 in the second race, or the sixth race. That was my second one of the day. And then here comes Kingsnake. He's 4-5 walking over. He's going to get claimed, but I'm going to win, and they're going to get a good horse. So we break. He gets carried straight to the rail. He's come rolling, and he runs fourth, got beat a length. So that horse gets claimed. I leave, I go to the barn, check everything out, everything's good. I run to the butcher shop. I'm going to try to beat the traffic, get home, and start cooking before, too late. So there's a line there at the butcher shop. You got to take a little ticket. So I took my ticket, and I'm sitting back there quietly waiting to get to, for my name to be called. And all of a sudden, the butcher looks up, and he goes, King Snake. And I said, he said, "Come on up." He pulled me up right in front of everyone who's been there before me. And he goes, "We know you're in a hurry. You need to get back to the barn and start training." So he let me go first. He gave me my cut. But it's funny that, these guys want to tout. And then as soon as you give them something that don't work out, they're ready to beat your butt.
That's the way it should be, right?
It's classic.
Now, Ron, let me ask you, are you from Hot Springs or Arkansas?
No, I'm from the border of Arkansas, Oklahoma, 3 hours that way.
He was born literally, as I've called him before, the Oklahansan, the Arkahomian. Yeah. He literally was born on the border.
I went to school at Pocola, Oklahoma. We started match racing at Stroud and Murray Spur and all that. Okay. And then whenever they got Paramutual, I was just a kid at Blue Ribbon Downs and went over there and did all kinds of stuff around that spot. That's where I first got my trainer's license and still some of the best horsemen I've ever known.
Blue Ribbon Downs. I pulled over finally. I sent that thing out on Twitter a couple years ago, and finally drove by that track. It's still there.
Yeah, it's awesome.
The shell is still there.
Well, they use it as a training center, but, we thought to ourselves we'd come up here and buy culls from Oakland. And when I mean culls, horses that can't compete here.
Okay.
And we would take them to Blue Ribbon, and, they may run, eighth in a maiden 10. And you buy them, and you come back there, they'd go to a maiden special weight, and you'd win. But if you could have a horse that had Oaklawn form, you were 6-5. It didn't matter. But that's where I was raised, and I thank goodness for it. It wasn't the best thing to get your foot in the door in the business, but I think it taught me how to deal with what you had in front of you. And I think that's helped me keep horses around and keep them sound and going and hold their form for a while.
So Oaklawn was the closest major track to you.
Oh, yeah. Oaklawn was Mecca, and you would kind of go to Remington or Fair Meadows or Louisiana Downs, but Oaklawn was the Mecca if you could make it. Now, this is before Lone Star and whatever, but if you'd run a horse at Oaklawn, it was almost like you were getting to go to the Final Four. I mean, they thought you was a big, and you might get beat. As you see, that horse ran fifth the other day at Oaklawn. That's how it was.
Did you run it, like Manor or any some of those kinds of?
Trinity Meadows.
Yeah.
I've been around those. I stabled it. You know, an interesting thing about Trinity Meadows, they had a boxing gym or a boxing ring in one of the barns when I was there. As a training, it was a training center when I was there, and we was, you know, one day walking around, and they said, that's where they keep the boxing ring. And I was like, no, they do not. And said, yeah, they did. They had a boxing ring in there. And I don't know why.
Instead of fines, you had to go two rounds with...
I don't know. That'd have been a lot better. I mean, at the time, I would have much rather took an ass whooping than write a check. I promise you. it wouldn't have been the first time I'd done that.
That's tremendous.
But there's the racetrack around, or the racetracks around here produced a lot of really good horsemen. Then a lot of them came and went and never got a shot. But there was a lot of really good horsemen that come from there, and they never thought about, you know, one day going up and trying to get set up at Churchill or Keeneland or whatever. And luckily, Remington came, and it kind of showed them that they could be competitive against those horses that were shipping in there. And you had to run against Frankie Brothers and Bobby Barnett and Jack Vanberg, and you know, those were terrifying names. But if you could compete against those, you might take one from there up. And I think it opened a lot of doors.
Did you? And I'm just looking at that because it got me looking at some of your early record. Was it rare money?
Rare money. Bought him off Dwayne Lucas for $5,000.
And almost broke the maiden at Keeneland.
Yeah.
And then broke the maiden at Prairie Meadows for your first win.
He was by Tank's Prospect out of a mare named Special and Rare. I went to see him, and he was crooked. He looked like a parenthesis. I mean, he could come and go at the same time. But that horse is still a sheriff's horse.
A pony, like a
in
pony?
Sebastian County, yes. But yeah, my first horse. Anyways, I bought him off Lucas and never even considered whenever we
Lucas,
made the deal.
Lucas bred him.
Yeah, that's a Dwayne bred. Him and Laura Pinelli or Laura Lucas at the time. And so whenever I bought him from them for $5,000. I never thought in a million years about how the hell am I getting this thing back to Salisol. You know, I knew that I was going to alter his shoe the way a little bit, and I knew that I was going to take a little more toe off and push him up under maybe, and I knew he had a sore a check ligament, and I could blister that and give it some time. I knew all this stuff, but I never thought in my little rabbit mind that, you know, it's going to cost me what I get for this horse to get him back to my part of the country.
Where were you at the time? Was it in California?
Delmar.
I was going to say, because he's a cow bred.
Yeah, and then I brought him back, and we I had to sell half of him to be able to afford to get him back to Arkansas and Oklahoma. But it worked, and it was a good deal, and we ended up going off as one of the top choices in the Heartland Derby with him.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, I lost him later in a claiming race and ended up going back and buying him. Dale NGL claimed him off of me, and he's a good horseman from down south, and he gave him his check ligament started bugging him again, and he gave him some time, and I looked up and I saw he was in for $2,500, and I called him and said, hey, I can't get down there to claim the horse, but I want you to know I'm working on a way to claim him. And he said if you want him, come get him. So I was eternally thankful, and we went and picked him up and hauled him back to my farm and kept him for about a year and a half, and then donated him to a guy named Mr. Farrar that found horses for the hunt and rescue for the police department.
Wow.
These horses can do anything.
Oh, sure.
They can.
You mentioned Bobby Barnett.
Uh-huh.
And I saw he's had one in the other day at Churchill. He was one of my favorite people. We would come here all the time when I worked at Monmouth. We'd stop here and see him. And he had all those mares. He had a run of having those great mares. And we'd get him to ship up for the Molly Pitcher.
John Franks.
When he changed from Mr. Franks. Yeah.
I mean,
John
they had
Franks.
A lot of success together. Yeah. And, you know, what was it? Halo America.
Halo America. She came up and won the Molly Pitcher up
but,
there. And
you know, Bobby Barnett and Frankie Brothers and Van Berg, they basically controlled things in the Midwest. I mean, and then the Von Hemel clan, you know, Don Von, who I think is probably, in my mind, Don Von, Bob Holtis. If there's a big wall of honor at Oaklawn, it should be there.
The Mount Rushmore.
They're down in Hot Springs. They have that Star of Fame. Have you been down there? You walk down there, their stars are in the cement.
But not only the fact that they did well with the horses they had, but the way they represented the sport. And when I come around, it was at the time where everything was changing to where we started worshiping this god-awful damn number called a win percentage.
Came up the other day.
And it went from the horseman being secondary. It didn't matter. You're now rewarded for being aggressive. If you're not aggressive enough for these guys, then you're unemployed, and they're going to walk the horses to someone who may or may not see them, but they got a very good number. But these guys, I thought, did it the right way, and they did it with class, top to bottom, and they made it to where that's Lynn Whiting. That's who I wanted to emulate. And I saw, no offense to God rest his soul, Cole Norman won every race there was. I never once thought, one of these days I want to be Cole Norman. Not once. Even though he was setting records for wins. I want to win, but I want to develop the horses. That's what they did. They developed horses that they had. It wasn't a high turnover. It was, I work for these breeders. We'll go buy a couple a year. And it seemed like, to me, that's what horsemanship was. And now it's kind of being masqueraded as something else, and I wish we could get back to that.
You couldn't tell a winning percentage 30 years ago from anybody. You never asked the question. You didn't know. You didn't care. You knew who the winners were. You knew who the best trainers were.
I remember when Bob Holtis, I sat right beside Bob Holtis, Jimmy Garrute, Lynn Whiting in the mornings, and Bob was the governor of Arkansas. I don't care who held the table in Little Rock. Bob was the governor.
And was literally married to Miss Arkansas.
Yeah, so whenever he, the first day that, I believe it was 2000, maybe it was a little before that, but the first day that they put those numbers in there, Bob was reading it, and he goes, "What's this?" And I said, "Oh, that's win percentage." He said, "That's the worst thing that'll ever happen to a horse." He didn't say horse racing. He said a horse. Now, that's within 3 minutes of seeing that number. He said, and I said, "Why is that? Why would you think that it would be bad for the horse or the sport?" He said, "It's going to change the importance. It's going to make people focus on this insignificant number, because if you know as well as I do, the guy selling you popcorn could take 20 horses that's worth $20,000, run them for five, and win 50% of the time. So it's going to move the importance to where it gives people a false sense of what is important in the sport, and they think, well, this guy must be good. He's winning a lot of races. Well, now what's happened is you take one of these horses that would have turned into a Lawyer Ron or would have turned into a Little E.T., and they're going to run for maiden 30, their second out, because you're not going to give them a shot, because that number means more to the people making the decisions of who gets the opportunities. Then, hey, that guy took a horse that had a check ligament from California and made it all the way to the Heartland Derby. They don't care about that anymore. It's, I see here that you were only 11%. Well, okay. I mean, I think that's the Mount Rushmore of Oaklawn, to me, is filled full. You got to, you know, there's some people up there that's high percentage guys too, but you got to put your Bob Holtises, your Don Vons, your Lynn Whitings. And I promise you this, none of those guys ever entertained it where the lofty numbers are now to where the guys that's got 300 horses live.
And didn't care about it.
No, it was so. And so as long as we start getting back to the horse and we start putting our focus where it needs, who does the best with the most, you know, or with the least, then we're going to have a shot. But whenever you change the priorities to a number, you're going to remove yourself from the horse being the primal focus factor,
and the horsemen are don't really shy about discussing it, because they think, the people listening, they're just jealous that they don't. Just ridiculous.
I was that way, and I quit worrying about it, and I'll tell you what happened. I was sitting there one day, and TVG was on TV, and I was sitting there thinking to myself, they said so many things about this one trainer's positive ROI of first off the win claims. So, I mean, Equibase is a great tool. You can look it up, anything. There is no lying anymore in horse racing, you know. So you look it up. I looked through there, and they're right. He was 28% first off the claim. That's a great number if you just shut up and said that, which is what they did. But what they didn't say was that 75% of the horses he started ran initially for less than 30% of what they purchased them for. Now, John Q. owner that is thinking about getting into a partnership or whatever, buying his first horse, he looks up there and he can grab this number. Well, look, that guy there who knows a lot on TV just said this guy's 28% first off claim. That's a good deal. If you do it, I think that when people start getting educated, it starts changing a little bit. So I thought to myself, you know what? As long as they're out there doing that, you better get your focus off of that and start doing the best with what you have. No matter what, just do that. Because you're not ever going to be the turnover, the claiming that it takes to do that. And I'm not going to train for the people that says, don't run this horse until he wins. I want to develop a horse. And sometimes it means, you know, if you got them as fit as you can get them in the morning, run them.
Well, we this came up the other day with Andy. Andy Simoff came on to pay tribute to Tommy Creel. And this kind of worked up an hammer. I don't know if you heard that, but the topic came up about racing offices writing races. You know, a trainer comes in and says, you know, I could use a race for so-and-so, and you know, and Andy was saying how Tommy would put one up, and that somehow we ended up in this same exact spot talking this exact topic, and I brought up the Tommy Kelly, you know, who talked about this with us many times when TJ would, you know, we'd have these long conversations with him at Saratoga a couple of different summers in a row, and it got horses working out six times to race once, as opposed to, you know, running five times to then win the sixth start.
Well, a lot of that has to do, here's the thing, a restaurant only cooks what people are buying, right? They'll 86 something an item off the menu because nobody ever orders it. Well, for horse trainers, a lot of people are realizing that that's an important deal to owners. If an owner who they make up everything that goes on in the sport, I mean, they are, and they deserve more credit than they get.
And the players.
And the players, for sure. But if the owners are the ones who decide gets the horses, if they started going and changed the narrative a little bit and started putting the focus back on the horse instead of a number, then you're going to see all of a sudden we're not going to have as many shortest fields. Because right now what happens is a guy with 10 horses can't be as aggressive as the guy with 100. He's having to be a little bit more guarded, so he enters that way, and then look up, and if the owner goes, well, you're 9%, they put him out of business. He's over there. He's now clerk of scales somewhere or paddock judge. And then they send him over, put these others with those others, the other 200-horse outfit with a pretty number. And then the next thing you know, they're all running, you know, six outfits, got all the horses. There's seven maiden special weight fields.
You know, I can attest to that over the years and years of hustling horses at tracks around the country, where you would call when you're picking up the phone in the afternoon and you're trying to get that sixth, seventh horse in a race, you're looking at charts, and most of the time when you find a horse that you call a guy on, it's probably fits where you're calling him. It's like, hey, Ron, the horse just ran third for 20. You know, we got a 25 here. You know, small field. You want to go in there. Hey, he's ready to run. You put him in. Now, it's like I would call you back, and they're doing all the da da da. You know, there's a 16 in 3 weeks, and I think I could probably be 3-1 in. So I'm going to wait for that spot. Yeah. So there's guys that have horses that are ready to run that will run them in close to the you know, whether it's six, I'll go run 6.5. If it's a mile, I can run a mile 16. Some guys will just wait and wait and wait for that perfect spot where they're going to be 3-1, where maybe that number won't get hurt. And I've just seen it get that way over the years. Instead of just running, you know, you're not going to win every race, but if your horse is fit and ready to run and there's a race, put him in.
Yeah, put it now with the purses that we have everywhere I go. You can make a lot of money and pay an owner's training bill by being second or third. You know, it's okay to be second or third. If you want to win, nobody wakes up in the morning going, in our sport, going, hey, I'll be okay with second or third. But at the end of the day, if you get 20% of an $80,000 pot, you just paid your training bill.
And if you do that three or four times in a row,
for a couple of months.
That's exactly. It's the Barry Abrams method. You know, it's going to work the horse. Well, let's just put him in.
Yeah.
And get a check. It's just incredible. Doug O'Neill, he's a perfect example. He has a horse ready to. He has won. I tell this over and over. He has won more races that he necessarily wasn't pointing for because the horse was ready to run, and he found a spot to run because he needed to run, and he wins.
So it's funny that people have that reputation. I think Bill Mott, Ian Wilkes, all these guys are probably going to be on two lists: those that are the horsemen that you'd like to have your horses with, and horsemen that don't necessarily try as hard the first out. For whatever reason, they're on both lists, right? So the other day, I get a call from an agent because every time that I have a horse run well, people know I'll sell. You know, they're all for sale, just all but Whitmore, you know, and I actually sold him, you know, to pieces.
Yeah.
So the guy called me and he said, hey, I want to know if you'll sell this horse. He won his first out. And I was like, yeah, just write down. He said, well, I got to tell you, I'm not trying to be ugly to you, but one of the things that they liked was they said that you only win first-timers with good horses. And I said, what does that mean? He said, well, we looked you up over the last 10 years, you know, between Petrov and Treble and you know, made a list of all these horses, and he's Whitmore. And he said, if they win their first out with you, they got to be good. And I was like, is that a compliment
or not?
Yeah. And he goes, no. He said, that's a selling point. I'm an agent. I said, this horse is a nice horse. You should buy into it. I promise you, Ron doesn't beat them up for their first out. And he did this on his own, which means he probably has more natural ability than a horse that wins their first out for Wesley or for Todd.
Yeah.
Or for Steve, or for Brad, or sure. For whatever. If Ron has one that wins his first out, then that sucker's probably naturally better than you think he is. And I thought, okay, I'm going to take that as a, I don't know yet. You know, I'm going to take it. I'm just going to take it.
That's pretty good. I do want to circle back. There's a couple of things I want to bring up with you before, because I know you got horses out there. But I want you to circle back to Rare Money and as an example. Because there's an important opportunity to educate, especially in the environment we're dealing now. And you talk about first off the claim. We've got an environment where anybody that wins off a claim and quote unquote moves a horse up has to be doing something. And you talked about something about a horse being, for anybody listening that whose ears might have gone forward, about a horse being sore and taking some off the hoof, cutting the angle of the hoof differently so the horse hits the ground differently and suddenly isn't sore. Explain this to people, Ron, because when I say that, you know, the horse went into a different barn and somebody's done some things to improve the horse, It may be as simple as working with the farrier so the horse is hitting on a more balanced basis and what was bothering him in the hind end or somewhere else has now dissipated and he's a different horse for that reason. Nobody took a needle to him and I'm sick of it.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the things that we got to remember is there are a lot of different ways of doing things. And it doesn't mean they all work. So I like to shoe a horse a certain way. And what we do is we'll say, for instance, if a horse is a little bit crooked, I let them be crooked. God made them that way. They've been running around a field that way.
And they adjust themselves.
Yeah, don't try to straighten them up. Just let them be what they are. And sometimes when these horses come out of these big sales and stuff, they're bought and you get them back and you get those. I mean, trust me, these consigners have great farriers that can make what they need to happen, have a and they need them to look correct. So after a little bit, you start seeing, well, no, they're not. Well, I think a lot of times you see these horses, they get a certain way, and then the next thing you know, they're not training well. And so when I get a horse, the first thing that I do is work on the feet. And then I figure from that point on, we'll work the rest of the way up. But I think the misconception about he must be cheating, he must be juicing, all that crap, is that it's the monkey in the tree theory, okay? The monkey in the tree. When you're teaching a horse something, if you ever have something scare him at that point right there, he's coming around the corner and there's a tree right there and something comes out in front of that, that horse is always going to look at that tree and be worried that something's coming out of it. Well, with their gamblers and with everything, they look and they see the Navarros and they services. And now that's the easy excuse for anything that happens. Well, they must be cheating. I truly believe in my heart of hearts that the majority of the horsemen at any racetrack, and I'm saying controlling vast majority, 99.9% of them are doing well, and they're doing it the right way. But you could change this, change that, pull blinkers off, put blinkers on, train them the morning of the race. I've seen there's certain trainers that I see that just jog backwards for about a week after they run. And I watch horses, and then there's another guy I see, gallops with a stopwatch every day. And if I claim a horse off of the guy that gallops with a stopwatch and wants him to gallop in 154 every day, then what I'll do is I'll become that guy that just jogs him a little bit to let him gather himself back up and see if I can rejuvenate him. There's all kinds of different things you can do, and it's our job as horsemen is to figure them out. Sometimes it just has to do with placement.
Well, isn't that why you claim a horse? You see some potential, and you see something that you might want to try different to get that potential out of him. You need someone who doesn't understand all that needs to read that book about Jack Vanberg, the newest one. Who wrote that one?
Well, you mean not the one? Not the autobiography, or do you mean Grit and Glory?
Grit and Glory.
Yeah.
Where it explains about his old days, and he would sit on the rail and literally know every horse going by at Exarban or Detroit or whatever.
And there's people like that here, right?
There's
now.
A lot of people, and they know, and they go, they see that horse, and they go, I think I can fix that. I'm going to claim him, and they fix it.
Yeah. If I ever get that horse in my barn, this is what I'm going to do differently.
Exactly.
And well, for instance, I had a horse named Humble Chris. Look him up. He's an Arkansas bred. He's bought by Siberian Pine, come here out of Sickle, right? No pedigree. Mr. Donaher, God rest his soul. And
say the name again?
Humble Chris.
Humble Chris.
So that was the first time somebody accused me of juicing him. With my win percentage, that don't happen very often. But I claimed this horse for non-winners of the year for $5,000. And I thought to myself, he is so slow out of the gates. He's got this big, long, lumbering stride. All I'm going to do, he ran a mile the day I took him. All I'm going to do is try to get him to the trail's end. See if he can just gallop him to death.
The mile and three-quarter race.
Yeah. So the first time when he claimed him, he won a non-winners of a year for five. But what that did was, if anybody who's astute that's looking, that made him eligible for starters. And instead, they come back and go, well, he won four of his next five races. He must be cheating. Well, he wouldn't have been eligible for them starters had he not been at the level that I claimed him. So when I got him, we started between running him in those starter allowances and running him a route of ground, which he ended up winning by 26 and a half one time, or 28 and a half, going 2 miles at Prairie Meadows. This horse turned into a winning machine. He was the second winningest horse that year. And I started being accused of being a juicer. And I wore it like a badge of honor. I'm like, y'all think I'm cheating? That must mean I'm winning a lot of races. Well, with this horse, we actually found what he wanted to do. He wants to run all day. He doesn't want to be rushed. I don't have to train him hardly at all. You gallop him every third day. You jog him in between. He saw an ice tub, he would run and jump in it. I mean, he loved his life. And it was just a good deal where it all came together. But that was the first time that I was accused of I must be cheating.
Well, if you're going to cheat, why would you cheat with a $5,000 horse? Come on, cheat with a better horse than that, right?
Well, with today's sensitive testing, and now I don't know if anyone has talked about this. We've got security in the barns here now. We've got cameras, high def cameras. In my barn alone, there's 28 cameras.
Well, you left a big part of the story off.
What was that?
You moved this horse up off Scooter Dickey.
Scooter Dick, and you know what?
How'd you manage and that? That's a story.
That's a good horseman right there, though. I mean, he's
absolutely.
That's the deal. How about this? When I got the horse, he come to me the next day and he goes, "Hey, Ron, this is what I was doing. I don't know. It ain't helped him that much. Maybe I've kind of wanted to try this."
He only had him for two starts.
Yeah, but he told me, "This is what I was doing, and this is what I wish I'd have done." And I was like, "Thank you, Mr. Dickey."
Tell me how often that occurs, because I hear those stories that you get a horse gets claimed off of you, and you want to go over and tell them a few idiosyncrasies of the horse and how they eat, maybe what they don't like.
There's different people that does it different. Now, for me, if the horse is about to do something on a habit wise that's going to put the next trainer in jeopardy. Like I had a horse named 8 Count that was a savage, and he would lead you in all quiet, and the next thing you know, he had you down stomping you. I went to the guy that claimed him and said, "Hey, listen, this horse is a mean son of a bitch. Don't, treat him nice. Don't ever try to school on him, but he's mean." And, he gave me the old, "I've been training horses longer than you've been alive, buddy." I'm like, okay. Six minutes later, here comes the horse with half the bandage ripped off, running back to my barn, and I catch him like this, and I said, "What happened?" He said, the daughter was taking the bandage off, and he bit her and pawed her, and then took off running back to my barn. And I couldn't wait. I was sitting there with a smile, because she come told me, and the guy that claimed her, I was like, "Everything all right?" He goes, he said some words. And then the other thing is at the end of the day, there ought to be like the doctor's oath or whatever. It should be horses first, no matter what. If I've got a horse that needs something, or like, say, for instance, "Hey, this horse is real prone to colic if you feed it this type of feed, or it's got allergies to this type of bedding, or, he'll get tough and want to run off." Try to help the horse, no matter what. It's competition. But at the end of the day, we're out here all together doing one job, and that's taking care of horses.
Well put.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought this horse up to our attention. There's so many things about this that's unbelievable. Not to mention the variety of horsemen that had him, including Joe Woodard and Billy McKeever, and it's funny. Scooter actually had him once before that, and went back. And Danaher went back and got him.
Yeah.
So this was a horse that everybody knew had some talent.
Mr. Danaher come to my barn, and if anybody knew him, he's an Arkansas legend, right? He galloped his horse around a chicken barns and stuff. I mean, he's a different dude, but gracious, kind guy. He come to my barn. He goes, "Hey, I want to tell you, thank you very much for the amount of rewards or horseman's awards that you give me."
There you go. Goes, Arkansas bred. That's right.
That's why I wanted the horse to go to someone. He said, if it wasn't going to be with me, I wanted him to go to someone that was going to do well with him. He said, I look up and he said, "Man, I got a check. I got a big check from him." I'm like, well, shoot, it worked out. I'm glad it worked out for all of us. He was actually going to send me a horse when he got sick. But it was, those are the kind of stories. There's been some claims that didn't work out, too. There has been some claims where I got him and I was like, "Man, I can't get along with this horse. He doesn't look like he should with me. I'd be better off if he went somewhere else and drop him down in," and they claim him, and then the next thing you know, they're eligible for the starter. So that's how it works. It's ebb and flows. There is nobody that much smarter than the room, but some people that are more willing to blinkers on, blinkers off, shadow row, hell, even cheek pieces, I guess I saw the other day was cheek pieces on, which is odd. I never thought I'd hear. Yeah. But it's anytime you're willing to try something, you're moving in the right direction. But it's not always what the gamblers and the people that just lost their money say it is. Now, but because of the monkey in the trees theory, they got a reason to say it, and you got to listen to it. And then you, you know, unfortunately, we just got to keep getting better at policing ourselves, because I can promise you this, the stuff that they got that they think is going to police us is going to do nothing to stop anything. All it's going to do is going to do what every regulation and rules does. It makes it harder on the people following them. The people that disregard the regulations and the rules are going to keep doing that. That's what they do. So our job is, as a group of horsemen, is to understand that it's going to take us to completely police our own sport.
And on that topic, you know, you're on the national HBPA, you're on the Arkansas HBPA, and in fact, we're coming back here. In fact, I told Hammer didn't know it. We're coming back here this year after last year's convention was canceled. Coming back for the convention in March here at Oaklawn.
You know, and that's the thing about the HPBA topic, you know, about the HISA deals. I get a lot of flack, but I actually deserve it because I put it out there. And my job is to question things, and I'll do it. But one of the things that I saw the other day was the representation. We made noise about the claiming deal where they were going to limit the purse 1.6%, which is insanity. And then now I looked the other day and about which states are represented in this HISA and the integrity board and the other board. And I noticed very quickly, and other people noticed too, that the following states are completely omitted out of representation in anything involving HISA: Arkansas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Texas, Iowa, Ohio, all. But you know who is? Colorado, Nevada, and Tennessee. They all have representation on the boards. So now, maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe. Or maybe it's like Tubby Smith's wife, whenever she walks to the barn and asks me, is my horse going to run, twice on the Kentucky Derby Day card? You got people that don't understand what they're regulating. When you replace common sense with regulations, you get regulations without common sense. You got to apply both. And what every time that we say something, it's like, oh, well, you just don't want LASIKs, or you just don't want change. No, we want rules. We want policed sport. We want what's best for the horse. Trust me, that's what we want. We don't want someone that doesn't have a clue what's going on the backside telling us what that is. That's the whole problem. Yeah. And if you did, you wouldn't come up with these asinine regulations that are basically derived top down to put the little guy out of business. And I have a lot of horses. I'm lucky. But the people that I represent don't. The big people don't need any representation as much as the little guys.
You're 100% right, and that's one of the topics we talked about the other day with the 1.6. Immediately, that's the first thing that jumps out at you, is the 1.6 first. But I'm hoping, beyond hope, that when they put this original paper out and they ask for comments, that they are going to take the comments and hopefully go back in the room and listen. And I'm glad that they put that out there. And you guys have commented. We've all commented. We've all said, sitting right over there, the pact. I went through it. I got to page 16, and I stopped circling stuff, and I just had to stop.
Yeah.
And I wanted, my one question that I asked one of the members or people involved was, who did you have in the room that knew anything about racing? Was there a racing person in the room? And I never got an answer.
Well, you know, the more I read it, the more I'm befuddled. But I do think, here's how I am. I'm a middle kid. I'm constantly looking for ways for people to get along and to figure out a way to make everything fluid. I think that this can be a good deal. I really do think that we want, as a group, we want better uniformity. We want drug reform. We want cheaters kicked the hell out of our sport.
Level playing field.
That's it. But to go into it and think that you can do that by removing all voices of horsemen and to just listen to the upper elite, you're going to have a country club where they run about.
Well, we've been beating this drum for years because it all got to the LASIKs as the jumping off point, and the concept that they don't want the sea level tracks. They want to push out the small.
It shows you by the way they're who they allowed to be represented, which states they've allowed to be represented in that. You know, one of the funny things is that if you look at the field sizes across the country, where are they healthier than Arkansas and Oklahoma?
Not many places.
None. I'll answer you that quick, fast, in a hurry. Arkansas and Oklahoma have bigger fields day to day than any place in the country. Yet we're doing something wrong? You don't want to hear how we do things? Well, let's listen to the people on the coast. No offense, they have good racing. Not saying it. But let's listen to them. They haven't figured out a way to stop their stuff. Why won't you go to... Every now and then it's okay to listen to somebody that wasn't kin to somebody. Is the reason they got their job. That's the way I look at it.
No, like I said, let's just hope that they do take, and I know the tracks have been asked to respond, and I know most tracks have, and I hope they sit down and take that into consideration.
I asked that question of Matt Hegarty and Alan, you know, what the mechanism was going to be. There hasn't been any formal response from any industry organization. That's why Arizona is going to be very interesting Monday.
Well, they asked for a response. They didn't ask for a public response.
But why hasn't there been? Why has there not been a single press release in response to this? Not one from any organization.
It really shows you can say a lot, but
calling
what you don't
anything
say.
Into question, or saying you know we welcome this and we want to have anything, but there's been zilch.
My grandpa told me a long time ago, you can tell what people think, not by what they say, but what they don't. And a lot of times, and I'm calling the people that write, who's better at that than I am, for sure. They're smarter with words and stuff, but they were very quick to jump on, we need this, we need this. But the story isn't over. What's going on to protect horsemen? And why hasn't there been anything written?
They're not looking to protect horsemen. They're looking to negate the horsemen in the entire equation.
Yeah.
That is the goal. And it's also the goal long term to even take the horsemen out of their negotiation stance and the power that they have in dealing with the racetracks. That's the goal, is to neuter the horsemen completely.
Well, until we get regulations started at two-year-old training sales, until we get regulations started at the breeding farms. I think that you start from the start, right? Some of these horses.
Todd talked about this actually. Todd Pletcher talked about that. If you're going to do all this, you better do it from the moment the thing hits the ground.
Exactly. I'll show you a picture later of a horse that won a maiden special weight at Churchill that had corrective surgery. And you know, and the horse can run, and sometimes it works out like that. But I promise you, he didn't look like he did whenever he won that race. But the thing is as I get it, Lasix. Lasix is bad. Lasix is bad. We just changed the horse's whole angles of legs, but Lasix is bad. That's so. I'm okay. We'll move on from it. I want to, whatever the rules are, I'm going to be the ones following them. It doesn't matter. I'm here for the horses. I'm here to take care of my owners and my help. And I invite anybody that wants to come back to the barn and see that it's not smokes and mirrors. It's sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong, but we're trying by putting the horse first every time. And 99.9% of the horsemen back there are doing the same thing. And if anybody says different, they're spreading an agenda that you better not jump onto.
Nice. Yeah. Quick question before you go. You've been unbelievable.
Thank you.
Ron Moquette's been with us. Spectacular. I saw where you won the other day at Remington, and I do see it's a good thing you're not running Switzer at Remington, because he'd be 1-5 if you start running a horse named after Switzer.
Shoot, yeah. He's owned by a proud OU alum who had a bad week last week. But we're going to try to give him a better week this week. He's the same guy on Dupree, and every horse that he likes, he names after. And also in partnership, equal partnership of that, is Mr. Bob LaPenta, who I have had very good luck with. Thank God for Mr. LaPenta. He's got me to the Derby twice and an Eclipse champion. So, for whatever reason, we don't get together much, but when we do, it's usually fun. And this same group owns Firecrow, that set the track record at 5/8. at Pimlico, which is not easy to do.
Has he named a horse after Wayman Tisdale?
Yeah, we had Tisdale.
That's what I thought. I thought you had Tisdale.
Yeah, and usually, if knock on wood, if he names them after an OU guy, when it's his turn, they can run. And Mr. Harlow is Eric Johnson. I call him Mr. Harlow. He has Harlow Stables. He's a OU fan on good days and bad. And you know, me being an Arkansas fan, I want there to be more of the latter.
What about Red Queen tomorrow?
Red Queen is on the Harry Rosenbloom reunion tour. He's one of my longtime clients that is sent me a couple of horses, and we always do well. He owns Gentleman's Bet, and he also was the original owner when we bought a Far Right before he sold to Mr. LaPenta. But we like the horse. We think that I'm going to tell you this, if it was four post out, I would tell you to go stand in line and bet. I don't know what the inside post position is going to do because there's some speed to the outside. And, you know, these babies, until they get hit in the face, you know, and that's
you
what happened.
Yeah.
You know, they get that dirt in their face. They don't know what they'll do.
You don't replicate that in the mornings with some tag team?
We do, and we've done it well. But I was amazed at the fact she didn't win her first out. I thought I had her prepared. And, you know, the fact of the matter is,
good horse. She didn't win her first out.
Yeah, that means you're not going to sell her for a kajillion dollars because she didn't outrun my training. So that's what that means.
You've also got Rugs in the stake tomorrow.
Rugs, yeah. The bad timing of a name of a horse, but we like him. I think he's going to be fun. We're trying to get him from point A to point B, which Mr. King has owned a lot of really good horses, but he sells them. He's a pin hooker, and he's 80 years old, and he's decided he wants to start running a few. And he's an Alabama guy, and named him after what he said was the fastest guy in the NFL. And so we really like him. We thought he won that race pretty easy. I know there's some really good horses in there. You don't run in a stake race at Oaklawn and think it's going to be easy, but I'm excited to see where he's at. Whatever this race is, if he wins it by five or runs third by 10, there's better stuff coming up for Ruggs down the road. He's getting better and better.
You've also got Prodigious Bay on Saturday.
House horse. It's Mr. Sella's horse, and he's instructed me that I have to do well. So I don't want to be homeless and unemployed at the same time. So we're going to try really hard. He also has Luminati that day, which is we bought this horse privately from the Sheik. He won his first out at Gulfstream, ran very well and had a little shin then, and give him some time off. I know that your listeners will probably be questioning the timeline there. Well, he had a shin, and then the unfortunate passing of Sheikh Hamdan. So he got caught up in all that. So he was out in the field, you know, being turned out for a shin. And then he was for sale, and we bought him.
Very nice. So that's in the eighth on Saturday.
A very unfortunate name because I can't spell it. I call him Lamu because it's got two A's and two T's and a Z, and I think there's a semicolon in there. I don't know. It's a bunch of elongated vowel sounds, but it's just hard to say for me.
One at first asking, and this is quite a nice opportunity, as it happens, that this horse up.
We're excited. He's going to need a race. Even if he wins, he'll run better his next out.
Huh. Well, this is a fancy horse.
Yeah, yeah. He's got class. He's got the right stuff. I'm not one of these guys that's going to work them 5/5/8 before I run them. I'd rather lead them over there and let their natural ability come up, and then we can adjust from there. I think it's safer on the horse in the long run.
That Gypsy Lou was a Len Regio Meadowview, my Meadowview farm that Graham Motion trained, and this is a nice family actually.
Yeah, and you know that's one thing about that organization that we got him from. They didn't mess around.
No,
they did things the right way. I mean, I've had several that I've had several owners that had to do the right thing with their pocketbook when they figured out who they breed and what they buy and whatever. And that's fine. I swim in those waters, but that's one that didn't have to. They just did what they thought was the best.
Exactly. Ron, unbelievable. I can't thank you enough. Just every single visit, every time we come here, we always have just the most wonderful conversation, and nobody franker and more direct and down to earth. Just a pleasure.
Well, thanks for having me. Enjoy your time here. Oh. I know you will, and tell everybody else how great it is. We love everybody that loves us, so come on down and visit.
Well, we'll be here three times, I think, it looks like, between now and April.
This is the first time I've done an interview where I could stand up and watch my horses gallop as they go by.
Perfect.
That's perfect.
Perfect.
It's worked out good. I'm seeing my wife go by on Osborne right now.
Oh.
That's good. That's one of our hopes for the Smarty Jones there.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Well, we're going to check in with you, and undoubtedly, you're going to be some regular visits during
all
the
right.
meet.
You got it. Good to see you. Good to see you, Hammer.
Yep. We get to see you all for the next 5 months. It's fantastic.
It's unbelievable.
I still can't believe it's December, and we're here.
Ask him one with the mic here. Give everybody your restaurant, your favorite joints in town.
One on a fancy night, go to Bugler.
Okay. Right here in the building,
yeah,
you mean?
Yeah, that's good. Then you go to, I'd say go to where you guys went, 501 Prime. Unbelievable.
It was very good.
Try the spare rib for the appetizer.
Ooh, that I didn't know.
That's next level. Then for breakfast, we have two things. If you want to feed a lot, if you want a lot of food, go to Oaklawn, to the Track Kitchen.
Good idea.
Here's what they do. Whenever you get a to-go pancake, it comes in a large pizza box. No exaggeration. That's what it comes in. Now, if you want fancy and you want probably the best breakfast I've had, and I've been all over the world, is the best cafe on Wachita. Now call in, get a reservation. But it's
reservation for breakfast?
You just trust me. It's called the best cafe. And if you're not going to eat and load up on carbs at the Track Kitchen, then get your butt over there, because I promise you this. People that come here and go, wow, Arkansas's backwoods, whatever. They go there, and the next thing you know, you feel like you're in New Orleans. It's good.
Ooh. Ooh. So,
and don't tell them I sent you, because they don't really want a lot of people. So just
now they're in trouble, because yeah. they're gonna be people walking in going, I heard Rod Moquette on Vic.
Yeah, but it's on Wachita, and it's called the best cafe, and it's good.
Outstanding, Ron. Great job. Ron Moquette, everybody. Just always tremendous, amazing. Hammer, you know, every time we come here, That makes me think of every time I come here, you too. Right? The scene in the opportunity to spend time with him is always well spent. He's just incredibly refreshing, and you can throw anything by him.
And genuine. He's a true horseman. Yeah, exactly. He loves the game. He loves Oakland. He lives right down here in the backside, a couple doors down from the blue door, as a matter of fact, of Kenny McPeak.
That was funny.
You know, you get the feeling he's into it. He's just, he learned from the ground up, which a lot of the horsemen here did. They started at you know, bush tracks all around and learned the trade, and they're here. And it's... Like you said, you haven't heard anybody complain about starting in December here. They're all thrilled.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, the 3 days a week, not an issue either, and it's just a winner. Let's do this. What do you got?
We're talking about that.
Yeah.
The 3 days a week. We just a quick review of the schedule. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. 12:30 post. One thing that's changed is the scratch time. So we used to have scratch the day before and then get the new scratches the day of. We're scratching at 8:30 the morning of the race with the goal of getting all the changes up on Equibase and out to everybody by 9:30 on a daily basis. So on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, we'll scratch that morning with all the changes, jock changes, weight changes, out by 9:30 on Equibase and social media and everything else by 9:30 in the morning. So that's a little bit different. Rather than have, you know, a scratch time the day before where we give some changes and then change them again on the race day, we decided to just do it one time on the morning of the race.
Nice. That'll be well received, and we'll do some more of that kind of stuff. Let me do this though. Let's take a break. Perfect opportunity. And when we come back, I got to get Tony in for a quick hit, and we've got Lou Sella, right?
I just put the word out. To come up at any time between now and the end of the show.
Perfect. All right. Very good. Let's do this. Quick break here, and we'll be back to Oaklawn Park. We'll talk about, when we come back, we'll talk about what Hammer and I were treated to yesterday with this the unbelievable. Jen Hoy took us throughout the new building and also along the way, the changes that have happened between the two new buildings. I mean, they've turned it into this sort of seamless, and it was an absolute treat. Back after this to Oaklawn.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents